This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And a good morning to you, SB Nation Radio. It's SB Nation AM. Tony D, Ron Culver, and you can hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. And spell Ron with two N's so he gets it. Because you don't want him to give it to the other guy, the other Ron Culver that's on Twitter that has just one N. Drew Brees is coming back, 41 years old. He'll be playing another season. Doesn't want to play for anybody else but the New Orleans Saints. What does that mean for Teddy Bridgewater, who played really well when Brees was out, went 5-0 with the Saints? Could be off to another place getting a payday. What does it mean for Taysom Hill, who people said he was in line to take over if Brees had announced his retirement? I think for Hill, it's okay. I mean, you're still the Swiss Army knife player, and I've been saying this. I think that even though the big money comes from being a starting quarterback, you don't want to become a starter and fail. That's not how he thinks. He thinks he could be a legitimate starter in this league. The problem is that the stuff that he's done for the Saints, you got to evaluate whether or not he can actually be a every snap starting quarterback. And I think right now there's not enough evidence that he could do that. He says he could, but I don't think there's enough evidence to say that he could. I think his ability to do different things for the Saints offense has made him a famous player, a well-liked player, a very popular player. But let's not mistake the fact that he doesn't throw the ball very often, right? He's not chucking it around 20 times a game. They don't want him to do that. They didn't need him to do that. But this is good news for the Saints, because you have this window of opportunity to win a championship, and the Saints are there, right? It's hard to get to the Super Bowl. It's hard to win a Super Bowl. You know, you play your games at home and you see what happens. I thought that they would easily beat the Minnesota Vikings, and they didn't. The year before, they played a game in which they were cheated out of a call by the refs that could have sent them to the Super Bowl. It's right there. Brees knows this. It's not like he's joining, you know, re-signing with a rebuilding process and we just really hope things are good. He really knows, hey, look, with me on this team, the way it's constructed, the way it's coached, we should win the division again, and we should be a team that is one of the tops in the NFC with a chance to go to the Super Bowl. I'm not ready to throw that away to retirement yet. If I can play, I'll still play, because getting that next Super Bowl is right there. If the Saints were 3-13, I think he'd retire, but they aren't.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Could the days, Ron Culver, of bashing the NCAA be a thing of the past?
Bashing?
Could they actually be doing the right thing as we head into 2020?
No.
Oh, contraire.
It's like drinking water to bash the
right.
NCAA.
Even if they're doing the right thing, we can still bash them, right? I mean, we can still put them in their place when they do things. We go, oh, got to be kidding. The NCAA is on the verge of allowing its athletes in its major sports, and I only say major as revenue producing, football, men's and women's college basketball, hockey and baseball, in positions where the athletes could transfer one time without having to sit out a year. They'd be able to go right from school A to school B without any problems whatsoever at their own discretion. And this is a welcome addition to a process that was so hypocritical forever and ever and ever. Whenever we saw the players getting punished for deciding that it was not in their best interest to be at a school, but instead wanted to go to another school because they believed in a coach that let them down.
Not only that, but I mean, the other side of it too, where some players transfer to be closer to a loved one that was on their deathbed, remember?
Exactly.
Like there
exactly.
was a guy like in Illinois, the kid in Illinois who I can't remember what school, where he was wanting to transfer from or whatever, but his grandfather was dying. And he wanted to transfer because the grandfather was always close to him.
Yep.
And NCAA kept saying no.
Yeah, it was a really, really ancient process, arcane process of paperwork. It was massive amounts of paperwork that you'd, like, if you wanted to transfer and you had reasons to want to transfer, you had to go through this entire bureaucracy. And now the NCAA, in its own self-interest, is eliminating that bureaucracy. They're eliminating all the extra work that they have to put into every single case, looking into every single case, getting backlogged with all of these cases and going, look, goodness gracious, we're going to go through this whole process. You know, we're eliminating like a whole department that does that. On the same side, though, it's the fair thing to do in a world where more and more people are looking at it and going, you know what? This is just simply unfair. It is unfair for you, Mr. Head Coach, to come into my house and tell me you're going to take care of my kid and that you want my kid to play for you and that my kid will be a star for you. So then 3 days later, you can take a job at another state, at another team, in another conference, 1,000 miles away and be nowhere near my child's development and leave him in the hands of somebody that did not enter this house, that did not talk to us about his playing future, because he's only got 4 years to do it. And if, especially if he is an athlete that may not have the necessary ability to turn his skills into a professional contract. But if he's just good enough to get a scholarship, to play, to make the most of that experience, to use that educational opportunity, to go on to do good things or great things, whatever it is they may do, but he does want to experience the life of playing collegiate athletics, and now he's going to be in the hands of somebody who may not believe in him like you do, and that might not use him like you do. And if he wants out, he's got to give up a year of eligibility in order to do so. This was absolutely just insane for a lot of people. There was a different rule for the student athletes than there was for the people that were bounded by contracts to their universities who could get out of those contracts to go on to other jobs. As we've seen time and time again, as coaches have moved up the coaching ladder, they have left in their wake a lot of broken hearts, if you will, right? Of players who are really committed to the program because of that individual, and now they want to do what's best for them, and the NCAA says, well, hold on 1 second. That doesn't account for you. You don't get to do that.
Yeah, we saw it last week.
That's right. Mel Tucker is a perfect example of it. So this is now something that could be happening quickly for college athletics. Dan Wolkin of USA Today is going to join us in about 25 minutes or so. We're going to talk to him about this. We're going to get his thoughts on this. He's wrote a nice column about it, and he does point out some of these, why it was implemented in the first place, and now how are coaches going to deal with this? Because here's the thing. This is one of my pet peeves, and one of the things that I really get angry about, because I think it is an unfair characterization when coaches are subliminally criticizing players that quit on their program. When an athlete wants to transfer and they say, well, we've got kids who are committed here, and then we got the other kids who really don't see the value of being what we're trying to create. Right? That's fun and that's great and that satisfies your alpha male ego. But the reality of it is, you know it's a business, they know it's a business, and they want to do what's best for them as you do what's best for you. Right? And Wolkin points out some really good examples of this. You know, Jay Wright was at Hofstra. He got a promotion to Villanova. He's turned that into some national championships and a feeling of one of the top coaches in the game right now and being suited by, you know, being courted by some NBA teams. Urban Meyer had to be the coach at Bowling Green. He had to be the coach at Utah before he could become the head coach at Florida and Ohio State, and now is one of the biggest free agent college football coaches that we have in the country. So you have this system set up, and rightfully so, right? I mean, listen, I'll give you a quick personal story. I remember years ago, I was a young talk show host in a small market, and I had an opportunity to move up to a bigger market, and I had some contract issues, and I couldn't get out of my current contract, so I had to stay for a year, and I had to turn down the job offer, and, you know, they did right by me, and it was kind of cool. But I remember afterwards when I agreed, okay, to the new deal, I remember the general manager of the station, the cluster, was in, and he said, let me give you some advice, young man. And he goes, I know you got a young family, and you're going to be in this business a long time. He goes, but you know what? You're the CEO of Tony D Incorporated. He goes, in the end, this is your company. You know, he goes, if you look at it that way, he goes, just start everything that you agree to, everything you put in place. You know, think about you, think about your family, because nobody's going to look out for you. You got to take care of Tony D Incorporated. That's the same way these players are, right? They're getting this empowerment. Like, they're going into these schools, and yes, they want to be committed to your program. Yes, they want to play for you, but they also are the CEOs of their own personal business. They don't want to spend 4 years at your school not playing football or baseball or basketball. They want to play. And so if they get to the university and they realize, you know what? I was sold a bill of goods here. I am on this team so that I don't play for the university across the street, who is also on. So they're bottling me up here, and I'm not being able to play, but at least I'm not playing for the rival. Well, now I get to go play for the rival, when before I needed all of this paperwork and all of this hassle, and I had to give up a year just to go do that. Now I don't have to do that. And I think it's the right move, because it's been this hypocritical state for quite a while. But when you couple that with the fact that the NCAA is moving forward with implementing its own ability, its own regulation, its own system of allowing student athletes to make revenue outside of their universities for their image and likeness, because they were kind of forced to by the legislative branches of these states, and now they said, well, forget that, we'll just put in our own system to let it be across the board. Well, they're starting to crack down. They're starting to break down a lot of the walls that they have built up for criticism and how they do business, right? I mean, look, there's been all sorts of accusations leveled at them as how they treat student athletes. You know, look, you know, how far ago was it when the UConn basketball player talked about starving, like hungry, going to bed hungry because he wasn't given enough food in the cafeteria? Right? When he wanted food at midnight, he couldn't get any food. He's like, I don't have enough money to buy it, and I can't get it. And all of a sudden, UConn was like, oh, really? I'm sorry, we didn't know that. Well, yeah, they did know that. But when somebody used the national stage to point that out, all of a sudden you've got school, you know, boosters probably calling up going, yeah, I'm sorry, I would love to be competitive in recruiting, and this kid just told everybody not to go to UConn because he's starving. So let's fix that so that we can continue to do what we just did, which was win a national championship. Right? I mean, there's all sorts of these kind of things. And the NCAA gets all of these arrows thrown at it, and rightfully so. Remember the television show Ballers? It was on HBO?
Yeah.
I think it's still on. Is it still on?
I think so.
Okay. That was.
It's always like a summertime thing.
The Rock played this character, and his character was a former athlete that was getting into the financial world, right? After retirement, he was managing players and becoming an agent, and he was getting more and more powerful. But they did a whole storyline where he was going after the NCAA for all sorts of things. Like, that was the storyline. But, you know, and it kind of didn't make sense, and it was kind of a little over the top, but it was relevant to the sports world. They were just making commentary on the sports world. So they were seeing something and saying, look, can we write it into the story? Even though it's kind of, it'd be kind of a weird, but a little far-fetched and might be getting a little preachy, but we can take what's going on in the news and put it in this fictional world, and it would make sense to the viewer because they're seeing the level of corruption and hypocrisy that we all see from the NCAA. And it made sense, right? Like, you'd watch it and go, all right, one man can't take the NCAA down, but I understand his character's arguments when he reaches the media and he starts talking about all the things that they're doing at the hindrance of the athlete. Now, with the fact that they're willing to let athletes make money off their image and likeness, at least proposal is in place to sort of provide an opportunity for that through regulation. And now you've got this where they're saying, look, you want to leave? You can leave. You can leave. Don't worry about it. You can leave and you can play. You are, if you committed to Mel Tucker at Colorado and he leaves and you're like, I don't want to go to Colorado now. I want to follow Mel Tucker. You can go about it, right? If you're at Colorado and you just watched the previous guy get fired and Mel Tucker get hired, you were part of the old John Embry regime Mike McCarthy. I'm sorry. McIntyre. I apologize. Coach Mack. If you were part of that and then Mel Tucker came in and you played for him for 1 year and you're tired of the coaching circle, you can leave too. You don't have to explain yourself. You don't have to write a letter going, this is the third coach I've had in 3 years. This is ridiculous. I'm so tired. You know, I just want to go to a place that's more stable. And then have that through a whole panel of bureaucracy to go, can Joe Smith, safety for the Buffaloes, transfer out to Arizona? Well, now he can without that problem. It could be a whole new world.
So obviously, I mean, there's a ton of upside. But the negative of it is that you could, in essence, create a super team.
You could. Yeah, it's true. That's true. You could. And listen, for all of the coaches that are going to complain about this are the same coaches that are going to capitalize on this the moment they can. Right? They're going to camp out. Like, if you're...
Yeah. Well, for instance, who's the... I don't even know who the top wide receiver is for next year.
Right.
But I'm just going to... So I'll just use this way. Say Jarris Judy. Right? He looks over and he's like, you know what? I don't think Tua really has it. I'm going to transfer to Clemson.
Yeah. And he could do that now.
Right? I mean, he could.
Yep. That's right. That's right.
Now, he
might say, okay, I'm going to transfer to Clemson and then find that great. And then somebody at Clemson might go, well, I'm not playing here anymore. I'll go to Alabama.
Right. Yeah, that's right? True.
You know? So it's and it's a good opportunity. Here's another thing, too, before we close this one out. It's another opportunity for a kid. Let's say he needs a little development. So he goes, plays for, Louisiana Tech or something like that, you know, or Southern Miss. And he grows and he goes, you know what? I now feel like I could play at Ole Miss or I could play at LSU. He can go there now. And those coaches would love that without him sitting out a year.
Or right? maybe he's scouted. Because, I mean, this is another way now for if you're at a smaller school like Louisiana Tech. You know,
right.
You know, any number of these coaches can go and scout. And just, you know, kind of recruit from there and say, you know what, I kind of like this kid. Let's, you know, we can bring him in this year. One-time free transfer, he can start immediately.
Yep,
doesn't
that's
have
right.
He doesn't have to waste a year.
Dan Wolken, USA Today, is going to join us in 15. We'll have that for you coming up. Just to put a little bit more finer point on what this ruling actually will do to the college athletic landscape. This is football, basketball, women's basketball, hockey, and baseball. All right, it's coming up on SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. It's O-Reward Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Stop in today for store-wide savings. Plus, you can earn double O-Reward Bonus Points on all sale items like wiper blades, motor oil, tools, accessories, and more. Not an O-Rewards member yet. Sign up today online or in the store. Take advantage of Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. It's fast, easy, free, but hurry. Double points are only available for a limited time. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. Did you see this signing yesterday? Greg Olsen has landed with the Seahawks.
I did see that.
Yes. 1 year deal worth $7 million. He's getting $5.5 million guaranteed. That's kind of chump change for an NFL team, but isn't that great that you can get $5.5 million guaranteed for playing in like 4 to 6 games when you inevitably get injured at some point during the season?
And going to possibly a Super Bowl caliber team.
Right, exactly.
Like, I mean, you could play. You know what? This is what I envision for Greg Olsen. He'll play maybe the first half of the season, then he'll sit the second half because he's injured.
Right.
And then he'll come back in time for the playoffs and shine.
I can't remember a time when Olsen wasn't injured, but I'm sure it was recently. I just always remember him hurt. Like if you said, oh, no, he played all 16 games like 2 years ago, I'd be like, okay, I'll believe you. But for some reason, I always feel like Greg Olsen's always hurt. He's always injured. But I think this is kind of a cool addition because when he's healthy, I think he's still a better option than some of the guys they have. I know Jacob Hollister is growing at that position for the Seahawks. Luke Wilson is also there, but I think Olsen allows a very reliable target for Russell Wilson. They like to use the tight ends a little bit in that offense.
All right, I have your answer for you.
Yes, go ahead.
2016.
Oh, okay, so not that long ago, but not recent. It was 4 years ago that he was that he played all 16 games.
Yeah. 2006, and I mean, he was pretty reliable. His first year, 2007, he only played 14. I don't think that was because of injury.
Right.
And that's his first year. And then from 2008 to 2016, he played every single game.
Well, golly, he was more of an Iron Man than I'm giving him credit for. Okay.
Yep.
See but how then, perception can change. Remember I made this point yesterday where you can think of something and have it not be true, but you could just believe it because it just feels right? And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, wait a minute, I was wrong. He was more of an Iron Man football player than I give him credit for. Even though the last couple of years he was hurt. But he wasn't always hurt. But I believed he was hurt. See, this is a problem for Jose Altuve because in a few years we're going to go, of course he wore the buzzer. Of course. And even though there's no evidence to prove it, we're all just going to believe he did.
Nah, I won't believe
not
he wore
you,
a buzzer.
Not you, but I might. The more and more I look at that Aroldis Chapman pitch, I'm like, wow, okay. All right, maybe he did know what was coming. He really got on that quick.
I don't know. But that's my overall point, is that sometimes you have this perception of a player and you realize it's like the Mandela effect thing, isn't it? Right? Is that sort of like the Mandela effect?
No.
Really? Man, I wanted to use that so badly. No, you just shot it down.
Yeah, no, I did. I had to. Because Olsen has been injured quite a bit the last 3 years.
All right. So if I went around and I asked 10 people and I said, what is your thoughts about the health of Greg Olsen? And I had 10 people go, my God, he's always hurt.
Yeah.
And then I go, here's the evidence. He actually only recently has been hurt, but he hasn't always been hurt.
In 2017, he only played 7 games.
Right.
2018, he only played 9 games.
Right. Okay.
So those two right there are the red flags for us, because it took him 2 seasons to play 16 games.
Good point. So my early assessment, I can't believe this is fun. This is the way we kind of break these arguments down. Yeah.
But last year he played 14 games. So but he wasn't probably relevant because there was no Cam Newton.
Okay.
And maybe Cam Newton's injury last year, we projected that onto Greg Olsen. Like, well, they didn't have Greg Olsen or Cam Newton
last
year.
Right. I gotcha. Okay. Very good. Very good. So one college football news from yesterday, Charlie Strong, the former Texas head coach.
Yes.
The former Louisville head coach and the former South Florida coach, most recently South Florida, has been hired by Alabama to be an analyst on the defensive side of the ball. Not defensive coordinator, mind you, but defensive analyst. I'm telling you right now.
Is that a made-up position like they gave Steve Sarkisian?
I think it is, but I'm not sure. But I'm telling you, that is a great hire. Charlie Strong may not have been the best head coach for Texas, but he knows defense. He's a really smart defensive guy. Really smart. He guided the Florida defensive teams in their championship years with Urban Meyer. He was the defensive coordinator for the Gators. He also was with South Carolina for a bit. I mean, he's a really, really smart defensive guy. This is a good pickup for Alabama. But this is what Alabama will do, this man. They know who they want. You know, this guy may be out looking for a gig, and Saban goes, hey, I know you got a lot of brains in that particular side of the ball. We're going to use you. We're going to put it together. So also Clemson and Georgia will play in Charlotte in 2021. That's not that, you know, it's not 10 years down the road, but now Trevor Lawrence, will he be available in that game, or is he going into the draft before that year? I think that he's heading into the draft, because this would be his third year in 2020. So in the fall of 2020, so in April of 2021, unless he decides to come back for his senior season, he should be entering the NFL draft. Therefore, Trevor Lawrence will not be playing Georgia in Charlotte to open up the season, which I thought would be a good matchup because he's from Georgia and went to Clemson. He lived in Tennessee and moved to Georgia, and now he plays for Clemson. That would have been fun. That would have been a good storyline. Probably not going to get it, because smartly he should go pro as soon as this next upcoming season is over. So he should be the guy on top of the draft board. What's this I'm hearing about Joe Burrow not wanting to go to the Cincinnati Bengals? Is this
true? Come on, we can't have
people,
that.
Are people making this up to pick on the Cincinnati Bengals?
No, I mean, I can see some validity in it. But I mean,
oh, me too. But
he's a South Ohio guy. Why wouldn't he want to go to Cincinnati? Maybe he's just saying, I don't want to go back to South Ohio.
If this is true,
I want to go someplace tropical, someplace different.
I think what he's worried about is, all right, how's your offensive line? I don't want to get beat up. I don't want to be taken out of this league in 2 years.
So you think it's more football related than location
it could
related?
Be. No, I don't think it's location related. I think more football.
He needs to come out and say that, because he might make a lot of South Ohioans. Is that a correct terminology for him,
right,
by the way? South Ohioans?
So,
Ohioanites?
Does he have the kind of leverage Eli Manning has? Eli Manning and Archie orchestrated a departure from San Diego?
Well, I think that had more to do with the Manning name.
Right. I was just going to say, I don't think he has that kind of pull.
But does he?
Does he? Because I don't know.
He's like the hottest quarterback to come out. There's more of a name for him than it kind of reminds me of Andrew Luck. Like Andrew Luck probably could have forced.
Oh, I think so too.
Wherever he wanted to go,
I think so too.
Forced the Colts' hand.
I mean, Burrow's father's a coach, but I don't know if they carry that kind of cachet to sort of dictate. You know, we're not going to sign with you, like Eli Manning pulled in 2004. But we'll see. I don't know if this is true, but it's certainly making news.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. And you know I'm a big picture guy. I like the larger aspects of sports. And sometimes we see the way sports is run, whether it's the pros or whether it's the college. And there are some changes in the works, and they do lead to larger storylines and larger maybe issues or complications. But nevertheless, they are in our world. Dan Wolkin, USA Today, joins us to talk about this new transfer rule, or at least transfer amendment to a rule. He joins us here on SB Nation AM. How are you, my friend?
How are you?
Good. So, Dan, so tell us what. So, this rule now, is, or at least this procedure, is going to eliminate the 1 year waiting period in order to go from school to school, where you have to sit out a year for the major sports. Is that the way I'm reading this?
Yeah. So, basically, to just take it backwards a little bit, I think most people don't really understand that for the vast majority of sports under the NCAA umbrella, kids can transfer between schools and not have to sit out. The only sports where you have to sit out for a year are football, men's and women's basketball, baseball, and men's ice hockey, which are really the five sports that generate significant revenue for those schools. And what's happened in the last couple years is, because of the waivers that have been given out, people have been applying and trying to get these hardship waivers to waive that rule. They call it the year in residence rule, and the NCAA has been able to grant some of them, and it's just become this big sort of Pandora's box of issues and the a lot of complaints about inconsistency or lack of transparency about why one person gets approved for a waiver and another doesn't, and it's sort of become untenable. And I think the opinion within the NCAA has tracked toward the idea that, you know what, let's just eliminate this bureaucracy here and just give everybody one free pass to transfer during their career, as long as they're in good academic standing and they don't have to sit out, and that will save us a lot of headaches. And it's going to be approved and it's going to be implemented within the next year.
I've always heard the argument about when coaches get to move. Coaches get to move all the time, but the players have to sit out a year. That argument's been around for a long time. What was the rationale behind making a player sit out a year in between transfer destinations?
Well, I think if you go backwards in history, the original rationale was that players needed a year to acclimatize themselves mainly academically to their new school and socially. But I think now we've sort of moved past that, and we're at a point where you don't really need to adapt to your new surroundings. Kids, not only do they adapt pretty quick, but frankly, most of the high-profile athletes, they barely go into a classroom anyway. They take mostly online courses, and at least in the high-profile sports, they're kind of away from the general student body anyway. Their life is in the practice facility, and they do their work online, and they do stuff with their tutors, and they go to practice, and they lift, and they sleep, and whatever else. So that rationale kind of lost, I think, some of its luster. And really, it's about control. It's about coaches having more certainty about who's going to be on their roster, and not worrying about whether players are going to leave, or at least the incentive is not there for players to leave if they have, you know, if they run into some tough times because they have to sit out a year, and that's a big penalty to pay. But increasingly, I think people have figured out that that's not a good way to run college athletics, and it's about to change here in the next few months.
I'm sure there are coaches that are going to hate this, but then there are coaches that are going to benefit from this. There's positives on both sides of how you look at this from a coaching perspective. But how do you think most of them are going to react to this new way of doing business?
Well, look, most coaches are going to be against this because they will feel like, and they're not necessarily wrong in every situation, but a lot of coaches feel like, well, I can't go yell at a player in practice. I can't coach them hard because if they get frustrated or if they get angry, they're going to just go put their name in the transfer portal, and that, you know, the coaches will not have the opportunity to discipline guys, or, you know, or that there's going to be too much pressure to play them early in their career before they're really ready to be out there on the field. So there's a lot of things coaches are concerned about. And those concerns in some cases are going to be valid. But at the same time, you know, I think you have to look at the greater good, what's best for the athletes. That should be the guiding principle in all of this. And I think clearly what's best for the athletes is the opportunity to say, look, you know, maybe I made a mistake, or maybe I need to be closer to home for whatever reason, or you know, maybe I don't fit in here academically or socially, and maybe I made a mistake. I got starry-eyed during the recruiting process, and the reality is not the same as what I thought it was going to be, and I need to go somewhere else. I think all those things are valid reasons for not just athletes to transfer, but regular students. And regular students transfer all the time for those reasons. So why should athletes not have that same opportunity?
It seems like in the last few months that we are starting to see this new world that the NCAA is creating now, with the way it's going to go about with image and likeness and players being able to capitalize on that, to now being able to transfer without that 1 year of sitting out. I don't know if when those two worlds combined, what the state of college athletics is going to look like. Have you ever had a chance to process what that new world might be like?
Well, college athletics always evolves, and certain issues get pushed, and the NCAA is forced to react, and that's what we're seeing now with some of this stuff. But it's been building for a long time. This transfer issue has been talked about for years. The name, image, and likeness stuff has been talked about for years. And, you know, I think most level-headed people within college athletics understand that this has become a multi-billion-dollar business. That, you know, in the beginning of college athletics, it wasn't necessarily like this. It wasn't as commercialized. You didn't have the television presence. You didn't have conferences distributing $50 million per school. You didn't have coaches making $7, $8, $9 million a year. But that's happened as a result of the game's popularity. And so for all this other stuff to evolve, and yet the rights of the athletes and what they're able to do, for that not to evolve, is not a sustainable system. So I think most people understand that, what it's going to look like and what some of the unintended consequences are. We'll see, and I think people will be having to deal with those. But at the same time, the games are still going to be popular. People are still going to watch. It's still going to be a really entertaining product.
There's a cynical side of me on this where I, when I read your column, I said, yeah, I understand where they're going for this. Tremendous amount of paperwork, tremendous amount of bureaucracy, tremendous amount of red tape that every single player was going through. And I'm sure the NCAA would have loved to go, man, I don't want to do this anymore. But is there a feeling like there's a softer side to this organization that is looking at the players and going, we want to do what's right with them? We haven't done that for them in a long time.
I don't want to ascribe necessarily, you know, emotional motives to the decisions people make, but I would say this. I think the people who work at NCAA headquarters and college administrators and conference commissioners and all the powerful stakeholders in this, they read newspapers, they look at Twitter, they understand public opinion, and they're responsive to it, just like everybody else and every other aspect of society. You can read which way the wind is blowing, and, you know, I think they've seen that a lot of the ways in which they've restricted the rights of athletes and player movement and name, image, and likeness, that the public opinion has evolved, and that they're on the losing side of this if they keep the status quo. So I think that's more of it than, you know, some people just say, hey, we want to do the right thing. I think they're just responding to the reaction that they see out there.
Is there any negative consequences to this when we talk about mid-majors, smaller colleges? I mean, whatever sport you may want to go with that, in terms of the ability of these athletes to kind of get out of that and go on to a Power 5 conference, or the flip side of somebody going, you know, I really wasn't cut out to play at Alabama, but I'll go to Louisiana Tech.
Well, I mean, look, there may be some individual downsides for very specific schools or coaches or teams or whatever. But, I would say generally, you know, people in thriving, who are thriving in their situation, it's not necessarily their first instinct to say, all right, well, I'm going to pick up everything and leave and go to a different school because it's a higher profile school.
Sure.
You know, that doesn't make sense for everybody or even for most people. I mean, you know, Ja Morant, after his first year at Murray State, didn't say, okay, I'm going to go, you know, all of a sudden go play at Kentucky. He said, I'm going to go come back to Murray State and I'm going to blow up and be an NBA, you know, be a top three pick in the NBA draft. So I think it works both directions. Yeah, there will be kids who become high profile players at smaller schools who decide they want a bigger stage. That's happening now, by the way. That's
sure,
not
yeah,
something
that's right.
that you know, it's happening now and it will continue to happen. There will also be kids who go to a bigger school and decide that it's not for them and that they want to go to a place where maybe they have an easier path to playing time or whatever. And that's fine too. And that also happens now. So I don't think it's going to be all that different, to be honest.
Dan Wolkin, USA Today, on the new transfer rule that could be in place very soon. You do great work on that, by the way, of explaining it to kind of in a layman's terms how this all works out. I really appreciate your work. Thanks for coming on, my friend.
Thank you.
You got it. Dan Wolkin, USA Today, helping us break down what the NCAA could be doing, the softer side of the NCAA. All right, guys, it is time to talk about manscaping. And you know what? It can hurt and it can be painful, but Manscaped has redesigned the electric trimmer. The engineering teams have spent 18 months perfecting the greatest ball hair trimmer ever created and just released the new improved Lawnmower 3.0. The third generation trimmer featuring a cutting edge ceramic blade to prevent manscaping accidents. How great is that? Plus, millions of balls are about to be nick free. Thanks to Manscaped advanced skin safe technology. Accidents are finally a thing of the past. This is premium. The battery lasts up to 90 minutes. You can take a longer shave. And one of the coolest features is the LED light, which illuminates grooming areas for closer, more precise trimming. They've also upgraded to a 7,000 RPM motor with quiet stroke technology. And the charging stand, it's powered by UPS. You can show it off because it's intelligently designed and rapid charging. If you're listening to me right now and want to be the first ones to hear about this and utilize this life changing product, I want you to experience firsthand. That's why their Manscaped is giving you 20% off plus free shipping with the promo code SB Nation. That is 20% off free shipping with the promo code SB Nation. Use it at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. It's SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Michael on Twitter, tweet of the day, by the way. LeBron doesn't hesitate to voice his opinion on other sports using emotional, explicit language, but he can't comment on an oppressive, dictatorial regime in China. Oh, yeah, that's right. It doesn't affect his bank account. Good point,
Burn.
Michael. That's right. Well done. That is so true. That is so true. We gave LeBron the business last over the summer, didn't we? I mean,
yes.
The fall. The fall, I should say.
And that's my quarterback.
That's right. That's your quarterback. Good point. Yeah, LeBron's not giving any answers. He just wants Rob Manfred to do something. It's like, well, do what?
Well, what would Adam Silver do?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, that's a great question. All right, LeBron, tell me what Adam Silver would do. Let's say we find out 2 years later that Golden State cheated some way of you winning the second championship. Like, you won in 2016, but in 2017, the Warriors cheated. What would you want them to do? What would you want Adam Silver to do? Give you the title? Strip their other titles? Suspend them today? Like, what do you want them? What would you want Adam Silver to do? Right? I mean, what would you want him to do? And again, because of the union, and LeBron's a big union guy, all right, tell me how you'd want that to work. Right? How would you want that to work? Listen, I'm not saying Rob Manfred's the smart, you know, smartest guy in the room. I'm not saying that. But I guarantee you they've been in a room with a whole bunch of lawyers and a whole bunch of people, and they said, "What, can we do this?" And they said, "No." I said, "You don't want to do this, it's too much. What would happen if I did?" And they said, "Here's the problem." Bang, 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 bang. And he went, "Oh God, that's a headache." You know? So again, do I appreciate LeBron speaking out cross sports, yeah, sure. But
I mean, that to me, you know, that's an amazing thing right there, because he's going through a nightmare situation right now. And there must have been a bigger nightmare scenario that they didn't go down. Because I would have to assume baseball thought of every possible way this could play out.
Oh, sure.
They had to.
I think there's a lot of people in that room, in that office, that sat down and went, here's all of the things we can and can't do. Or let's talk, like I'm sure it was, throw it out. What can we do? Well, let's take the Astros and totally take them out of the league. Okay, no, we're not going to do that. Okay, cross that off. What can we do? Well, we can suspend 15 players. All right, well, let's talk about that. And they went around the room. All right, let's strip them of their title. Okay, let's talk about that. What does that mean? And they probably came up with a whole bunch of reasons and weighed both pros and cons. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that, like, that's, you know, that I'm all supporting their decisions. But I don't think this is Rob Manfred going, I just don't want to do it. I think he's like, I'd love to do it. I would love to have that power.
But hands are tied.
My hands are kind of tied here. But I'd love to throw the gauntlet down on this team and the Red Sox or whoever else is in when we find out is involved in this. I'd love to have that kind of power where I'm taking control of my game. Right. But at the same time, he is bound by certain collective bargaining rules. And until they strip that down, it's nothing's going to get done.